So as we all know, on Thursday, we received news that the lockdown will continue through at least the end of May. And with that, the new executive order from the governor beginning on May 1st, the lockdown will include some tweaks in there. And among them, there's three new businesses that will be that are deemed essential beginning May 3rd, greenhouses, nurseries, and dog grooming services. So I know Father Don is pleased that dog grooming services are added to the essential businesses. And, you know, I can just imagine the state receiving a lot of, you know, inquiries of what's essential, what's not, and how incredibly difficult that's got to be. And it's, again, it's a reminder, has been a great reminder for me, is, you know, for every mass, we pray for world leaders, we pray for politicians, and realizing the weight that they must carry right now as they determine public policy on how to move forward in the pandemic that we're in, looking for, and just weighing all these different things, is we need to continue to pray for our elected officials. The church doors, of course, we know, continue to be locked. Now, I'm not saying that the church should be packed this morning. Of course, it shouldn't be. We need to continue to be safe and practice social distancing. I think the locked doors of the church do seem to be somewhat of an image, or it serves as an image to, or confirms of what we know is the case today. And that is that for modern man, as we live in modernity times, for modern man, God is deemed non-essential. I saw Governor Cuomo, who, of course, another guy we need to pray for, with him and his team there in New York, is there in the heat of things in New York City dealing with the pandemic. Thanks be to God, the numbers in New York have gone down a little bit, both cases and deaths. And when commenting on that, Governor Cuomo said this. He says, "We have turned the corner on the coronavirus plague. It was not faith or prayers that did it, only hard work and science." Governor Cuomo, a Catholic, like that thought right there, permeates our culture today. That God is not essential. He's not part of the picture at all. And of course, science and hard work, like that's the thing that helped bring about the end of, or the lowering numbers of the coronavirus. But to say that God does not have a part of it is just an indication of where we're at as a culture and society. God is everything in that. God is being itself. He is above it, below it. He's the one that brings about everything. So of course he has something to do. He has everything to do with bringing this, but of course, only hard work and science. What's the result of God being non-essential? The result of God being non-essential is sadness. It's despair. Confusion. Our culture is plagued by despair. You hear me oftentimes mention the very telling statistics that the life expectancy in the United States has declined for 3 straight years now. What experts say, because of deaths of despair. Without God, there's no hope. And this disposition is the exact disposition that we find the two disciples in our gospel today. The two disciples that we encounter, like, they're in a bad spot. They're in bad shape. They're leaving Jerusalem. Their back is towards Jerusalem. They're leaving away on Easter morning. This is the same disposition that we could say that the Marys have in the gospel when they're walking to the tomb. They're saddened. They're recalling the events of the death, the crucifixion, Jesus being put into the tomb. And as Jesus, who is is disguised from them. They're not knowing who it is, comes up to him and say, hey, what are you guys talking about? In verse 17 here, it says, they just stood still, downcast, sad, discouraged. One of the disciples we know is Cleopas. We know he's one of the disciples. We know his wife was at the site where Jesus was crucified. So this is most likely, many believe, a relative or the uncle of Jesus. The next verse there, they turn to Jesus, not knowing it was Jesus, and say, are you the only person who doesn't know what has happened in Jerusalem these past couple days? And Jesus playing along and says, No, I don't. What sort of things are you talking about? Which is the ironic thing, because he's the only one that knows exactly what has happened. He said, and then the disciples say, the things concerning Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet, mighty in deeds and word. So notice here, notice Cleopas doesn't call Jesus the Messiah. He calls him Jesus of Nazareth. So in other words, he's saying, yeah, that Jesus, the guy's from Nazareth, you know, just the prophet. The prophet, one among many. So the two disciples have lost faith. Their hope is gone. They've fallen away. Jesus has become a non-essential in their life. How do we know this? Verse 21 says, but we had hoped that he was the one, but clearly he wasn't. We had hoped that he was the one. They're talking in past tense. Notice the lack of hope that they have, the downcast, the sadness. And again, this is the spot of modern man. Lost, confused, downcast. But notice what happens in the downcast, in the sadness. Jesus meets them there. The essential Jesus spoke purpose into their lives. As he walked along with them, he restored their life. He restored their hope. Afterwards, when reflecting on it, they're talking to each other and saying, weren't our hearts aflamed when we were with him and he broke open the scriptures? That's what we believe the gospel is. We oftentimes point to Romans chapter 1 of Paul describing that the gospel is power, life transformative power. It's always life altering news. But maybe we could say, especially in the case or in time or a season in someone's life when they are downcast, when I'm saddened, the gospel even is more powerful. When we're trying to put pieces together, I saw that there's a suicide hotline center in Southern California where in the month of March, they had an 8,000% increase in calls into their suicide hotline number. So it is, as people face more fear, they face the financial crisis, financial loss, the face of death. People wake up with a scratchy throat. Like I know, like I, when allergies came, like I woke up one morning, I'm like, oh man, like my throat's kind of, might I be getting the coronavirus? Spiritual issues tend to come to the surface, or questions are asked. Spiritual questions are asked. They're brought to the surface during difficult times. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us, because people are really looking for credible witnesses, people to speak in their lives to say, this is the difference that Jesus has made in my life. And that's the power of personal witness, is the power of testimony. We see in the first reading today, in the Acts of the Apostles, Peter stands up. He's giving the very first homily. He stands up And he says those things that Jesus was mighty in deeds. He was mighty in word, the things that he did. And he was crucified. He rose from the dead. And then in verse 32, it says, God raised this Jesus. Of this, I am a witness. So he's saying, know that I walked with him. Know that I saw him do miracles. I saw him crucified. I denied him. I hit rock bottom. I despaired. And I ate with him 3 days later after he rose from the dead. Like, I saw him. I touched him. Peter could stand up in front of everybody and say, my life was restored because of him. And that's what our world needs today. Pope Paul VI, in his little encyclical, he said, modern man listens more willingly to witnesses than to teachers. And if he does listen to teachers, it's because they are witnesses. A personal testimony often touches hearts in a way that mere abstract, maybe ideas or thoughts can't. Personal testimonies can really strike to the heart of the person. The Bible tells us that we are to always be ready to give an account for the hope that's in us. 1 Peter 3:15, always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who calls you to account for the hope that is in you. And do it with gentleness, do it with reverence. Like, to have respect for the person that's before us, knowing that they may be in rock bottom, they may be just longing for something to chew on, some hope to restore them to life. Father Don and I, we often talk about us being in mission territory, that this church exists not for us, but exists for those who are outside these walls who do not know him. Our mission territory, or the landscape, if you will, has changed. Like, for instance, like, we can't talk to people in person. We can't go out with them and have dinner with them or meet with them for coffee. Like, things are online now. Things are through phones. But the landscape has also changed in the sense that people right now, because of the pandemic, because of fears, they're more open to hearing the difference that Christ can make in their life. And so our mission here at Our Lady of Mercy to offer every person a life-changing encounter with Jesus, to grow disciples and send them on mission, that mission marches on during this lockdown. It needs a lockdown, or it needs to continue. And so I just want to offer us two challenges for this week. First is for all of us to go through our phone, to go through our phone and just look at our contacts, and to pick five people in our phones. Maybe we haven't talked to them, reached out to them in years. I know I was doing this the other day and I was scrolling through, and actually there was one time I meant to call Andrew Bogush, who's newly in my phone, just meeting him a little bit ago. And as I went to go call him, I called a different Andrew in my phone. And it was the most awkward thing. Hey, Mark, why are you calling? And I'm like, oh my, you're not who I meant to call. And we ended up having probably a 20-minute conversation, 20, 30-minute conversation, where I gave him an update in my life of what's going on. Hey, I'm a priest. And the beauty that God can work here in this. And so to go through our phone, maybe it's somebody it's in our phone, or maybe we went to college with. And for us just to use this opportunity to say, how are you doing in the lockdown? It's a great entry point. How are you doing with this pandemic? How's your family? Is everyone safe and healthy? To throw in maybe, is there anything I can pray for you for? And it leads us into the second challenge, is to have this second challenge in our back pocket on this phone call. The second challenge is to prepare and to know the difference that Jesus has made in our lives. And really, that's a three-step little process that can be done in 90 seconds. Like, what was my life before I knew Jesus? Like, what kind of person was I socially, spiritually, emotionally? What did my life look like? And then secondly, how did I come to know Jesus? Like, what happened? And even if, this is important to say, even if the conversion was gradual, not everyone has a conversion like St. Augustine where their life was just turned around like a snap of a finger. We can look at someone like Thérèse of Lisieux, she described her journey towards Christ was just this small little steps, little by little. Her conversion was just slowly over the years closer to Christ. For us not to be, to look at our own story and to be, say, oh, I don't have this big conversion, or no, St. Thérèse didn't. But to know how I came to know Christ, and then thirdly, what does my life now look like with Christ? And to have that in the back pocket when we go through our phone and we, the Lord, as we pray beforehand, Lord, what five people do you want me to reach out to? The resurrection, as we continue to celebrate this Easter season, the resurrection is so tightly connected to witness. A people giving account to what they have seen, to what they heard. Christianity simply would not have spread if that did not happen. And the same is the case today. And as modern man, as we continue to see God as non-essential, we'll continue to slip into a sadness. We'll continue to slip into a despair. And so may we give witness to the one who always meets us when we are downcast and sad. And let us be that person to have and to know the difference that Christ has made in our lives.